Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237. With us, very special guest, first time on Reaching Out, Adrian Adams. She is the speaker of the city council. She made history as the first ever African-American speaker when elected to that post by her colleagues in January 2022. Thank you for coming on Reaching Out.
It's so great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And before we begin, and I know you hear this a lot and there's no relations, you are not related to the mayor. So I want everybody to understand that we got to establish that from the beginning because some people might be hearing this for the first time and we just want to establish that.
You know, I was going to say, please don't ask me that. You know, Adams is my married name. There is no relation to the mayor.
Good. Now that we got that out of the way, you're the first Black speaker elected to lead the City Council of New York. And this is also the first city councilwoman with a majority of women serving in the city council. What has this experience been like?
You know, it really has been such an honor to be the first Black speaker. It's something that I definitely don't take for granted. I don't take it lightly. But, you know, whenever I'm asked that question, the my response and my feeling is always bittersweet. We're at the year 2023. And, you know, as Black folks, we're still doing first. So, you know, I sit back and I just say, you know, this is great. It's amazing. I'm so honored. But it took us this long, you know, to reach this milestone, particularly in the most progressive place on the planet, New York City. So I am honored. I think about all the trailblazers, you know, the folks that came before me and how they overcame so many obstacles. And for someone like me, you know, Southeast Queens girl from Hollis, New York, to be speaker of the city council is an amazing feeling. It's also an honor, of course, to lead the first women majority in history for New York City, leading most dynamic women and being able to place them in very, very dynamic positions within the city council. So I don't really feel pressure of being the first, but there is a responsibility that comes with that in making sure that I am not.
You know, growing up in Queens, I grew up in Queens Village right next door to Hollis. We used to go play basketball in Hollis at Hollis Biddy's. I used to take my brother there. Hearing Hollis, it came on the scene when, of course, Run DMC, the Orange Crush Band. On the other side, you had LL Cool J. And then you grow up and you hear the people from Hollis who really made a difference in life. You got Stephen A. Smith, who's actually from Hollis, Queens also. So there's a lot of people coming out of that Southeast Queens region that we grew up with that are really pillars of their community. Yeah. So how has the Black experience shaped your policymaking, if it has played a role in it?
You know, that's a fantastic question. We are the most diverse, not just the first women majority, but we are the most diverse city council in the history. We come from every corner of the city. And I think for the first time, we are representing a majority of underserved communities within New York City, being led by someone from an outer borough, when typically we've been led by Manhattan, you know, and we've seen a lot of policy making, you know, particularly Manhattan centric in the city of New York. Now we've got, you know, folks out there. You know, I always say to my constituents, I'm still your next door neighbor, someone that was living next door to a foreclosed property for almost two decades in Southeast Queens in Jamaica. Thankfully, that has changed and there's a beautiful home as of about 8 months now. But we are representing the most underserved communities in the city for the first time in history. So all of us take that responsibility very, very seriously when it comes to legislating. Along with this privilege, of course, comes the responsibility to secure the right investments within our communities, particularly with those that have not ever gotten equitable.
Okay. What has been your most challenging issue to present?
You know, Greg, I think the most challenging, and I don't think it would be any secret, you know, to any of us, and that's the homelessness situation, the housing situation for the city of New York. The fact that it is unaffordable for too many right now to live in our city, the best city in the world, has become pretty much unaffordable to live in. So that's become the most challenging thing right now, creating affordable housing, trying to ensure that my children, your children, our neighbors' children have a place to live, not only have a place to live, but can look forward to home ownership in their future instead of moving away to other boroughs, moving away to other states, moving away to other jurisdictions. I want to see my kids and my grandkids stay here. I want to see them raising my generation in New York, in Queens in particular. We can make that happen. So that's been the biggest challenge, trying to ensure living affordability for the people of this city.
Now, I say this to everyone who would listen, and I take this opportunity. About 10 years ago, I came up with not a solution, but a start. And I've given it to a lot of people in the past, and I'm going to say it again. It's probably my fourth time saying it. The New York City Housing Authority has vacancies.
Yes.
Now, they also have apartments that can be rehabbed and refurbished. So we're on the same page.
Yes.
We can start with the homeless families. Move them into NYCHA, and if you're paying over $4,000 a month to hotels to house those families, you could pay NYCHA about $500 or $600. That would give NYCHA some income. Mm-hmm. That would also reduce your budget for homeless services, and you can begin to house more families. Now, when you move the families out of the shelters, now we could work on the individuals, people who are, I would say, single or couples because they don't have children. Then you could put them, move them slowly from the shelters somewhere, but it's like a process. It's like a pipeline. You start moving people along. You're moving people. You keep the line moving. Now that I said before the migrant crisis, because now we have the migrant crisis. However, if we put the people first and keep moving people like a line, just keep moving people along, you start to tackle the problem little by little till the problem starts to dissipate. At least you have some movement. But NYCHA having all these apartments, one, not renovated, and two, empty, is not helping the housing situation. But if you put families in there first, you put you reduce the payroll, because why would you want to pay $4,000 to hotels when you could pay NYCHA $500 or $600? You save the difference, and that also helps your budget. And I keep saying that over and over again, but I'm just not in a position to try to enact that policy. But I would say that's the way to try to tackle the problem, reduce your budget, and have people have stable homes.
You know, are you on the city council?
I am not. That's why I'm able to say this, because I don't have a pushback. So I could say it. I just said it.
But your message and your messaging is the exact same messaging that the city council has been touting for such a long time. It was actually a part of our discussion around the voucher bills and the mere fact that we had to go back and forth with the administration regarding voucher bills that do exactly what you just said. Move along people that are sitting in shelter for up to what, 1-2 years? That's outrageous.
Yes.
We want to move these folks along. We want to get them out of shelter, into supportive housing, into affordable housing, into those 6,500, Greg, NYCHA units that are sitting empty because they need some type of maintenance, renovation, whatever it is. This is where the sustenance of our folks that want to get out of the shelter system, this is where that sustenance lies, in that available housing that is already there at NYCHA. Why haven't we taken the steps to manage the maintenance appropriately with NYCHA and make this happen? Because right now, as far as sheltering, asylum seekers, all of that, right now we're talking about emergency situation. We know that there is an emergency situation. We are bursting at the seams. And quite frankly, we're looking now, we've got no more room in these emergency facilities. But we do have existing NYCHA units that can be used to move our existing New Yorkers who've been sitting in shelter for far too long. We can move them into those units, make room for those asylum seekers who are looking forward to, you know, permanent housing, or maybe just looking for just to stop over, figure it out, move out of the city, move out of the state. All of those things are right here at our fingertips. Yet there is too much bureaucracy to move those things along right now. And that is what the city council continues to tackle.
Well, you have my support. And
Thank you.
Between NYCHA and the Department of Homeless Services and NYCHA, I don't think they would walk, because they need the revenue.
That's right.
Where you have them revenue. You need to save money. So
that's right.
$600 compared to over $4,000 is a savings per family. And you start, and this adds up. I'm talking about a monthly bill. And then you start seeing progression, and then people's self-esteem of having a stable environment, apartment, and NYCHA would be a better place, because you would have families living there instead of some of the other elements that come to stay there. So, I mean, it's a win for everybody around.
Right. You are so right. We would be remiss if we did not mention just the mere disinvestment by the federal government that brought us to this place at NYCHA right now. You know, across this city, the history of mismanagement of NYCHA, resulting in hundreds of thousands of NYCHA residents living in horrible conditions for far too long. We've got to mention that as well. Mm-hmm. Public health,
sure,
of course, is such a critical component of an affordable city, yet our city, state, and federal government has allowed conditions to worsen over these years, over these decades. NYCHA's capital needs now exceed over $78 billion, a striking figure for anybody to fathom.
That number keeps doubling every time somebody gives a number. Going back to Mayor Giuliani,
uh-huh,
and Governor Pataki. The state was responsible for $60 million a year from their budget for NYCHA, and the city was responsible for $30 million a year for the budget. Both Pataki, Governor Pataki, and Mayor Giuliani decided that they were not going to fund NYCHA. So that was $90 million a year that got taken out of their budget. Now, that's not a lot of money the first year. But the second year, 10 years later, you're talking about $900 million. Okay. 20 years later, you're talking about $1.8 billion. And the repairs went undone for those amount of years, 30 years later. So you can see it was, I don't know if it was intended, but over the years, NYCHA was underfunded from the state, the city, and then the federal government came along and cut NYCHA.
That's right.
And now we have the crisis. And that's the history of NYCHA. It wasn't that they woke up all of a sudden and they were in need of money. They were in need of money and they were starved for decades. And that's what we're facing. And I read about the scaffolding. Scaffolding has been up for the last 8 years. And it's not just an eyesore. The scaffolding has to be paid for monthly.
Yes. So
each development is shelling out money for permanent scaffolding, and no
repairs are being done on the buildings. You can't take it down. Bricks are falling. The scaffolding is up. They're charging NYCHA money. And it's just like a permanent income for the scaffolding companies.
Do you believe it?
I believe it. And it's goes back to Mayor de Blasio. And I just know the whole history. I've sat here and watched it. And I watched administration after administration come back and just do nothing. Go back, Mayor Bloomberg, but Mayor Bloomberg inherited the problem from Mayor Giuliani. Mm-hmm. Then it's Mayor Bloomberg, and then he's 12 years, and then Mayor de Blasio spent another 8 years. 12 plus 8 is 20. So we talk about 20 years, two decades. Now Mayor Adams has it, and I don't know if he realizes it's been 20 years of this.
Yeah. It's incredible when you think about it. When you think about all of the energy that's gone into shattering NYCHA, which conceivably is the best thing that happens to low income and now middle income people. When we think of the intentionality, yeah, I'll say it. When we think of the intentionality behind crushing this amazing system, it really is very, very hard to swallow. You speak about the scaffolding. I heard this morning on the news, 26 miles?
Yeah, 26 miles.
26 miles, the scaffolding within the NYCHA campuses across the city of New York. That's unheard of. It's horrible.
And then the next question you want to ask is, how much is it causing NYCHA every month? You could have repaired some buildings by now. Now, here's something else no one has thought about, but I know the answer. The makeup of New York City, as go back to Mayor Dinkins, when he says gorgeous mosaic, right. Well, that gorgeous mosaic starts to whittle away. And I'll tell you why. Because NYCHA is where you have the black and brown people mostly.
Yes.
You take away NYCHA, the 500,000, 600,000 people, and NYCHA no longer exists, you no longer have a diverse city. Think about that one. NYCHA goes, so does the building block of minorities and the strength.
Wow.
I already know this. So I put it out there. It's no secret. Now You say by design, not by design. It's something else for you to look at. Every NYCHA development that is taken away, you have more black and brown families that leave, and that number doesn't come back.
So true.
So what are you most proud of? We have a few more minutes left. What are you most proud of?
Oh, my goodness. Well, off the top of my head, what I'm most proud of is going into my district and meeting with constituents, meeting particularly with children and girls who let me know that I'm a role model for them, for letting me know that they've written papers on the first black speaker that happens to be, Adrian Adams from South Jamaica, originally from Hollis, Queens. It's an amazing feeling to know that I've put more funding into District 28 than any of my predecessors combined. To know that I've done more for schools, libraries, cultural institutions that will carry our children and our generations forward as far as education, learning more about themselves, the preservation of women healthcare, the best model in the country, in the nation, of what it means to take care of women and women's rights. CUNY Reconnect, Greg Floyd.
Yes.
An amazing thing, and I've got to let you in on this secret. CUNY Reconnect was inspired by my dad, who went back to York College while driving his 18-wheeler for UPS all those years. Daddy went back to school. So he drove the truck during the day and he went to York at night. He went to York at night at the same time that I was a freshman at York College. My father and I were at York College at the same time. So Dad got to experience York as a working man, driving truck for UPS. And I got to experience CUNY, New York College, as a first year freshman coming in fresh out of Bayside High School, went into York College. So CUNY Reconnect was a program that I proposed in my first state of the city to re-enroll working age adults who earned credit but left CUNY without their degree. So our goal was to re-enroll 10,000 students. But in just 1 year, we have re-enrolled over 16,000 students, you know, of which 60% of women and over 80% belong to our Black, Latino, and AAPI community. So that, I must say, is my proudest accomplishment.
Thank you. And your father was a Teamster because UPS.
My father was a proud Teamster.
Yeah, UPS just got a contract too. So
yes.
That's good.
Yes.
Listen, you got to come back because we have so many other things to talk about. Anytime you want to talk about something, you say, you know what? I want a conversation that I can have that's uninterrupted. I got a message to give. You're welcome to come back on Reaching Out. That's why we're here. Thank you for coming on. We're going to invite you back as many times as you want to come back. You've been listening to Reaching Out. Our very special guest was Speaker Adams, City Council, and we were so glad to have her. Thank you for coming to Reaching Out.
Happy to be here, from one Teamster baby to another.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.